Welcome to the Niched Agency Podcast, where we delve into the journey of owners who have gone from saying yes to everyone and every project to thriving industry leaders and authorities. Here's your host, Ryan McGovern.
Hello and welcome or welcome back. For those of you that don't know me yet, I'm Ryan McGovern. I'm currently the Director of Sales Marketing for SEO Brothers, industry leading white label SEO. Prior to that, I owned a few of my own agencies. Some were great, some sucked. Sold millions of dollars of digital services and helped tons of agencies with their personal growth and journeys. Join with me today is our guest, Carla Itzkovich. She founded International Contact in the 80s, a multi-language communication company that she then sold in 2022. And she is now the owner and founder of Foresight Consulting, that consults with companies on how to sell themselves. So needless to say, Carla is just a fountain of information. Carla, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much, Ryan. I really appreciate being here.
Let's get right into it, Carla. People come here to learn new things about the agency life and to learn new perspectives. People also come here to hear stories of agency owners. When they're trying to write their own story, it's fun to hear others. So if you will, give me your origin story.
Absolutely. And I think we all do it for the story, right? Or at least that's what I said when I was trying to sell my company after 40 years. So take yourself back to the 70s, late 70s. And I'm an immigrant from Mexico, circa 18 years old, 19 years old. And I wanted to do videos. I was going to school in Berkeley and I wanted to do videos. And what I knew how to do was sell. So what I did was I started a little rep company for video companies. Video companies were just starting. Music videos were just starting. And so I started selling for video companies who showed me the business. So I feel very proud of the fact that I brought the skill set that I had in order to learn another skill set, right?
Yeah. What were you selling exactly back then?
I was selling video production. You know, it was in the early 80s. And so it was like, do you want to video your event? Do you want to, you know? And actually, my first super huge gig that I got was to videotape the Exotic Erotic Ball in San Francisco. I don't think they still have it even.
I'm interested. I'm going to Google it right now.
Yeah, let's see. While you find out if it's still going on, right? So anyway, so I got my crew set and everything. And I get to the venue like 45 minutes before it's time to videotape. And I haven't told the story in ages. And the crew doesn't show up, you know? And all of a sudden, I'm like, shit, what am I going to do? And so I looked around. They were stuck on the Bay Bridge for traffic. I'm in the Bay Area. And they were stuck in traffic. And so I found a guy who was there with a camera who was a news media, and I got him to help me to start the videotaping before my crew got whatever. And I got out of that event and I was like, you know what? You can't trust anybody. You have to do everything yourself. So I declared myself in business right that day.
Yeah, sure. You want something done right? Do it yourself.
And I became Eye Contact, who was a rep for video companies. And so we were making videos, we were happily selling videos. And then my mom, she was a TV personality in LA on Spanish media. She started a program there. Mm. And she kept saying, you ought to do Spanish. And I was like, no way, I speak English without an accent. You know, nobody's going to know I'm an immigrant. I want to play in the Anglo market, right? And so, but she kept saying, we really should do Spanish. We really should do Spanish. And Spanish was just coming online right around there in the 80s, right? And so my first huge gig was with Pacific Bell. This is going to be really dinosaur stuff for you, Ryan. But anyway, so I called my mom and I said, I got a contract with Pacific Bell. We've made it. And so we're in the middle of doing this shoot and the guy comes up to me and he says, you're from Mexico, right? You can do it in Spanish. And I was like, sure, I'll do it in Spanish. And so a few Spanish videos later, this guy at Southern Pacific Railroad, who also doesn't exist anymore, says to me, well, you do Spanish, then you do Japanese too, right? And I was like, okay, sure. And so I walked out of there. And the way I like to tell the story is that I got really lucky because I had no idea really how difficult it was to find a good translator and everything, you know. And so I got really lucky. I found a really good translator. And a couple of years later, this guy from the railroad calls me. Intermodal containers were just coming into effect. And he says, Carla, do you know that we're promising that the trucks are going to arrive undamaged in Japan? And I was like, nope, I didn't know that the trucks that we were promising. We were over-promising, right? So the big lesson was translation has to be smooth, but it also has to be accurate, okay? And so from there, we developed a way to find linguists, and the whole language industry was growing, and we became a multi-language marketing agency. And one language followed another. First, we did 16 languages. Then we did 35 languages because we were totally keyed into making commercials in 16 millimeter or 35 millimeter and then 70 millimeter. And then eventually we broke 100 languages, and then we were only doing video, and every video needed to have some kind of collateral packaging or something to go with it. And so,
yeah, I was going to ask you, what was your offering like? You said it was only video production. You didn't offer anything else in the marketing space. Okay. Okay.
That was the only thing we did. We were like your video production department, if you will.
Yeah. So you found you're like, I'm good at this. Let's do a lot of this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were doing that. We started doing more languages, and then everybody would come to me and say, well, you know, we needed this packaging and we had somebody else translate it. Can you review it? And we would go like, oh, this language is terrible. I mean, you have to remember that this were in the days where manicurists were doing translations for marketing. Okay. Because there weren't translation companies.
And nobody else.
That was all there was. So anyway, so we got tired of saying this brochure is bad, because it's really hard to tell the client that what they did elsewhere is bad, right? It's kind of in your favor, but it's also kind of hard to do. So finally, circa 1987, 1988, we decided, hey, why don't we also do print production? So we started doing brochures and all kinds of print production. Then Apple was just, the Macintosh had just come into being, and they asked us to write something for the Apple multimedia program called How to Produce Multilingual Media. Multi-language multimedia or something like that was the name of the book that we wrote for.
You had an early 90s Apple gig? Is that what
I did? We worked directly for, I mean, the very first I could tell you many stories, because the very first worldwide simultaneous release that Apple did, it was run by a bunch of 20-somethings. Of course, I was a 20-something at the time too, right? But it was all super young people, and they came up with plan to do it, and they had a creative director who wanted somebody that was close by, and so they hired a competitor in Menlo Park, close to where Apple is. And about 8 weeks after, I had bid something like, I don't know, a couple $100,000, Ryan. It was the hugest thing for me, but nothing in today's numbers, right? And we lost the bid, and this other people got it. And about 7 weeks later, they call me from Apple and they say, Carla, they moved the color. I'm sorry, some of these things no longer apply, because moving the color now doesn't affect. But in those days, you had to share color plates between the languages in order to only flip the black plate. Anyway, too much in the weeds. But the point being that the other people
didn't understand
moved.
Any of that.
You didn't. See, because you're too young, right?
I was born in 92, but
okay,
those
days we had to separate the colors in order to print them. And you can imagine that the color film was all the pictures and everything, and then the text was in black or just maybe one spot color.
Oh, the text. Okay, that's the key there, is that you've got Japanese text and Korean text and English text.
Exactly.
Okay.
But if you move the color, because the other languages are longer than English, if you
then
move
the
color,
shift all of the other ones.
Exactly. And something that was going to be 23 languages, two colors print and done, is now like a huge color production, and they weren't in the budget. And anyway, a long story short, my quote was like a couple $100,000. They had me come to the Apple building. We had it running there like 24/7 because it was a worldwide release. And I ended up billing like $500,000. So the point is that it was a long, long time ago. There weren't language companies. We were doing multi-language marketing, nose to the ground. We had found our niche. There wasn't too much competition. competition started to come into the picture. Oh, before I do that, let me tell you, so we went from video to print, and then eventually a client said you have to do interpreting too, which is the spoken word. And we were like, oh, sure, we do that, you know, after all that experience. We do it. And so we started, and so we became a one-stop shop for your language needs. As language needs grew, we became a one-stop shop for whatever foreign language. We were your international contact. We had everything kind of wrapped up into a very prestigious position. And it gave me enough time. I think at that time I had maybe 10. I forgot to tell you that we went through the 2000 recession. And one thing about the foreign language business and the agency business in general is that you can grow and contract depending on the market conditions, right? So at International Contact, I went through one almost depression in 2000 and then a couple of other recessions like the crash of 2007 and in 2010. And the thing is that when you have a real niche that is a need for your customers, and we were all customer driven, right? And so when you have a real niche, you don't really, you can contract, you can lower your billings, but you don't really go out of business is what I found out. Since I didn't go to business school, all of this is anecdotal from my experience, right? So basically, I would say the number one thing is to, they say that luck is when opportunity meets preparation, right? But I think that the preparation, luck has a lot to do with it. Don't let them tell you that it doesn't. But I'm super, super lucky. I mean, I was born in Mexico. I came to the States. I managed to lose my accent. If I had to say one of the main things that made me successful in my agency was that we talked English like Americans and you felt confident. Because in foreign language marketing, one of my first ad ideas was like sleep better at night, right? Because you don't speak the language. And when you think about how many eyeballs look at a piece of copy or write a script or any of the things that we do in agency world, right? And then you hire a translator who does two eyeballs, you know, that's it, you know, and it goes to market. So you have to really be careful in the foreign language space to have a trusted partner.
I'll be honest. I'm a little bit ignorant. I've never considered this. There's like this whole world out there of language marketing, multi-language marketing that I've never considered before. I always just worked in English, and I've sold websites in English, and I've sold ads in English, and I've sold SEO.
See? And the thing is that this is low-hanging fruit for you, my friend, because just like...
So if I just learn Spanish, I should expand our horizons by me learning Spanish or maybe...
I don't think that's going to help, but it would help you have a better understanding of the market. But the thing is that there's a lot of bad translation. I'm sure every listener today has read some instructions that are just like, wow. You know, I have my favorite mistranslation stories.
Yeah, I bought this thing that could hang like my power tools in the garage from Temu, and the directions that came with it were hilarious.
Yes, yes. I mean, they're a joke, right? I mean, so here's what your audience can do to have fun at a party, okay? So to have fun at a party, put something in English into the automatic Google Translator, and then translate it back into English, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have a lot of fun. There's a song that takes Frozen. If you look up Frozen in foreign languages, and instead of Let It Go, which is what the original Frozen song is, Let It Go.
Oh, yeah. I have a three-year-old. We watch Frozen literally almost every day.
Okay, so this is your exercise for right after this podcast. Look up Frozen in foreign languages. And this girl took that song, Let It Go, okay? And she changed it 20 times, one language into another, one language into another, one language into another. And then when it came back into English, instead of saying Let It Go, it said Give Up.
Because it was just so massacred by the time it got back to English.
Because by the time, it's like playing telephone, but in different languages. And so what came out was Give Up instead of Let It Go, which is totally not the right meaning.
Oh,
right?
My God, that's so funny. I still have the exotic erotic ball on my other monitor.
Is it still happening, the exotic
erotic ball? Yeah, they had it in 2024 at the Flamingo Resort Hotel.
Oh, but that's in Las Vegas. That's probably something different. Maybe it was the original exotic erotic ball. I'll look it up afterwards. Just put Frozen in foreign languages and it should come up for you, or write me and I'll find you the link if you want to post it with the podcast. So anyway, the point is that As I learned from my Japanese experience that I told you about, translation doesn't just have to be smooth. It also has to be accurate. So that adds an extra dimension to the whole thing. But going back to you not knowing about foreign languages, Ryan, I just want to quickly make a pitch for any agency owner who is not playing in the foreign language space is missing out, because you're using all of the elements in order to make another version. And so all of a sudden, you can give your clients 10 times the reach for very little extra budget, right? So it's very low-hanging fruit for agencies to get into foreign languages. But don't go learn Spanish like Ryan said. Okay. Hire a professional, a professional marketing-driven translation. Don't use Google Translate to give your clients the translation, okay? Soon, maybe in 10 years, we'll be able to. And we can talk a little bit about how AI and the language models are affecting the language industry. But
yeah, what services benefit the most? Like if I'm another marketing company, like we just do SEO, but if I'm another marketing company listening right now, what services am I selling that could benefit the most from a service like that?
Well, just anything, starting with a phone number that means something in Spanish. Let's say that you're doing 1-800. Call me, right? If you do 1-800-YAMAME, if you're going to the Spanish market, they're going to call you more than call me. I mean, just as an example, right? So even translating your SEO, translating your monikers, translating your numbers. When I first started consulting with the Valley Transportation Agency, they wanted to be more friendly to Hispanics. Remember, this is back in the 80s. I was like, what, you're not doing anything? I mean, it's super easy. All you have to do is identify your drivers that speak Spanish on the buses and make them little buttons that say, yo hablo español, or at the bank, say, yo hablo español, you know, or Vietnamese or Chinese or whatever your target is, right? Again, if you're doing print, using the same images, if you're using inclusive images, you know, and then of course, parallel to the language industry, the whole inclusivity industry came up as well, right? So we also played in photography, providing models that were diverse, creating stock photography that's diverse. A couple of words sprang up during those days that are important to understanding this market. One of them is internationalization, and the other one is localization. So internationalization means that you make it appealing on a most global scale. When I did marketing for that, I used to say that we have a lot more in common than we have what separates us. For example, the Hispanic market in the U.S. is made up of not a homogenous group, right? There's Puerto Rican, Cubans, Mexicans, you've heard about that, right? Different parts of the country have different kinds of Spanish speakers. So how do you make one appeal to everybody from Venezuela to Mexico to Colombia to Chile? You have a lot of diversity within this group. It is not homogeneous, right? But there's a lot more that unifies that group than what divides them. So as a marketer, you can generally focus on what unifies them, being immigrants, we're all here, la, la, la. And then you can also target them specifically, like by going to the Calle Ocho Festival in Florida, right? So I don't want to imply that it's easy to get into languages. Of course, in 2024, it's a lot easier than when you had to go find a manicurist who maybe would do a good job for you. But it's not easy because there's Chinese companies who want to charge you 2 cents. There's AI companies who tell you that they could translate everything for you. There's health departments that are actually thinking of using AI things, and they haven't realized how many people have died because of that. There are a lot of issues in language.
If you try to translate, are you having chest pain, into Japanese, and it comes up as something else and they say no.
You got the right exact idea. There's a very
good trouble.
And all the languages are, you know, there's hundreds of languages, so it's super, super complicated. I focus on Spanish because I'm from Mexico and also because it's most accessible to people here. But the word for indigestion is very similar. I'll send you a link about a lot of the medical
indigestiones. Indigestiones.
You're going to test me. I was never a translator, even though I'm bilingual. So, you know, once again, let me make a pitch for professional marketing translations, right?
Okay. So I think that at this point in your story, we're still in like the mid to late 90s?
Correct. And so then we started interpreting because clients demanded it. Interpreting is spoken versus written, right? And we were doing over 100 languages. We were your one-stop shop for languages. And then COVID hit. And then all of a sudden, all these community meetings, government board meetings, all these places where we were sending interpreters, they went away and they disappeared, you know? And all of a sudden, there were no meetings happening at the government agencies until Zoom started to take over. And then, oh my God, how do you interpret over Zoom? Here's an opportunity. Here's a little niche, even within my niche, to find a way to survive the pandemic. And so we invented the event architecture job. And the event architecture job is to create an environment and with the right interpreters, maybe you need two different languages, maybe you need different channels, you need to get your audience to turn on their language settings, all this kind of stuff. So we quickly took advantage of that opportunity and started training people on how to have multi-language Zoom meetings. And then, of course, all the other platforms came into being. And to make a very long story short, sorry, it's about 40 years long, I was still creating niches within the niche when I wanted to sell. So starting around 2017, my dad, unfortunately, may he rest in peace, he got sick in Mexico. So I had to spend a lot of time with him. And I wanted to sell. It had been 30 some odd years, and I was ready to try to not be so working 60 hours a week or whatever.
Could it stand up on its own without you? Like, could you exit and sell?
Barely. But I mean, I had been away 3-4 months at a time taking care of my dad. So that was the fire that put the company through the test. And hiring, and I was trying to find a general manager and struggling through all of that because I had micromanagement tendencies and I never went to business school. It was just like one foot in front of the other, right? So through a lot of mistakes and trying to sell. And the first time I went to market in 2018, I mean, there was no way I was going to get my minimum price, right? So I had a lot of years of learning. It took me about 4 or 5 years before I sold my company.
Well, I have a question written down, actually, because you don't have like formal, you know, you didn't go to business school or communication school, whatever. What were some of the tough business lessons that you learned along the way?
Okay, I'll finish the story of the trajectory and then we can come back a little bit to talking about that for that. But I'm addressing that along the way for you as I give you my little tips of what I learned along the way. So in the selling, I learned so much and I learned that there were very few resources at the time for helping language companies sell. And I learned this very incredible statistic that only 40 or 50% of businesses ever sell. And that's because owners don't know or because they're not prepared or because they die, you know? And so you don't want to be the guy who just dies.
You know? you don't want to be the dead one for sure. Yeah.
So the way I like to say it now that I do webinars, so first I'll finish the story and then I'll tell you what I like to say. So I was in the Association of Language Companies and I knew that my peers would really enjoy and benefit from all the information I had received through my process, right? And so I offered them to host a couple of webinars on the topic. And so we did those webinars and the topic was just so fascinating to me that I started learning more and more and more. And then eventually we formalized the webinar series at the Association of Language Companies. We now have a webinar every quarter. And we have the M&A corner page where we can showcase all kinds of resources for the process of mergers and acquisitions for language companies.
So really your whole career, you've just been finding really great opportunities and creating a business around them.
Absolutely.
That's like you've been creating a niche four
or
five different times.
And I see the opportunity and I go, how can I make that into a business kind of thing? Well, actually, you know, I didn't start out that way. Remember when I started the story, I wanted to be in the Anglo market. I wanted to make music videos. You know, I really didn't want to be in the Hispanic market, but the whole Hispanic market grew up around me. And I mentioned the Association of Language Companies, which is a fantastic organization, very peer driven and really, really great. When I joined it in 2013, I had no idea that this business had grown into a $50 billion business, right? It's a huge business and it's growing anywhere between 6 and 8%. So it's up there with like casinos and all the yucky businesses that have growing up in our yucky society these days. But foreign language is actually a really healthy and good business that I love very much. And we were fortunate that we never took on any kind of yucky advertising. So we feel very virtuous because we help immigrants, we help people, and it's really a great way to go about in life. And so by the time I finished, I had a lot of friends and clients, mostly Fortune 500 or government, because the government has stepped up tremendously, especially in the U.S., with equity and inclusion to try to make sure that people have foreign language access, right? When immigrants get here, just a quick little pitch, is that when immigrants get here, the kids go to school, and so they right away, they learn English. But those adults, they kind of get left behind, you know? So anyway, so here we are. I was able to sell my business in 2022. I started doing these webinars. I have the M&A Corner. And so now I consult for both people who want a language access plan and how to get languages into your business, how to make money off of foreign languages and how to do that appropriately. Or if you want to talk about how to exit and how to plan your exit, the three points are that you can, there are three options for your business, entrepreneurs out there, okay? You can either be super successful and sell it, which is what I wish for every one of you, okay? You can go bust, which I wish for only my enemies. Or as we said before, you could go out first and leave the stuff to your kids. Or if you don't have kids, leave the stuff to the state. So a lot of people don't realize what they have in order to sell it. But everybody has something. You might have a client list. You might have a process. You might have something that you invented. It depends on where you've been successful, but don't close it, okay?
Are you comfortable telling us what you sold the company for?
It was more than $1 million.
Okay. So you're right now, essentially, you're very well off. So right now, going on podcasts, doing webinars, you're essentially just continuing to give back to the community. Is that your main goal right now?
That's my main goal. And also, it's a little bit of a vicarious opportunity, right? I mean, I was so lucky in my entrepreneurial journey, as I told you. You know, I mean, the other thing that I was, you asked me my lessons. So that I was lucky and I was brave. And the thing about brave is that it's right next to stupid.
Well, there's something to be said there. I can only empathize. I don't know what it was like being a woman in California in the 80s in a male-dominated market and then thriving in that market. That is brave in itself.
It is brave. It is brave. But my mom was such a good pioneer, you know, and she succeeded. She created the first Mundo Latino, which was a 90-minute daily magazine show on Telemundo. And so she was a great role model. But being here in the United States, so sorry, I mean, it's not so much politics as it is the fact that the United States is a beacon of liberty and equality for everybody all over the world. And so I came here for my last 2 years of high school in 1977, right? I had no idea really until around 2000 how patriotic they had made me to the Constitution and everything. But I did not personally experience a lot of discrimination. Sure, I can tell you lots of stories of boardrooms full of men and, you know, some yucky ones, some better ones. But the thing is that we were just struggling, and I had every opportunity because there are every government, every town, every city, every state, every federal government here in the United States has a minority women program. Okay. And the minority women program is
come
really
a long way in the last 30 years, let's say.
A long, long way. It gives you a real leg up in the world. I mean, it's not really preferential because anybody who comes from a disadvantaged background can take advantage of it. And it's really, really fantastic because they give you webinars. At the time they weren't webinars, they were seminars. But they give you all kinds of support in order to not feel lonely. So yes, it was difficult, Ryan, and yes, it was pioneering, and yes, it was exciting, and yes, it was terrifying together with the bravery, right? But more than anything, I felt quite supported in this country. And in fact, when I first started, this is a little bit of a side one, but it's still interesting. My dad, he was a real traditional Mexican guy. again, may you rest in peace, Daddy. But he did not want me to be in business. He would have much rather that I was married and having kids, right? But later on, when I became successful in business in his eyes, and I was actually making money, and I was working my tail off, and I wrote the Apple book, and I did all these things, you know, I had a couple of interviews and everything. He used to say at the end of his life, well, she really works, you know, and he was really, really proud of it. So attitudes have changed a lot, and I have been part of changing those attitudes, but I do count as part of my luck that there were all those women before me that opened up the way, and all those men in California that were like, yeah, you can do it, and I don't need to be oogling you. You can do your work, you know. I remember when I went to do a video for Levi Strauss in Kentucky, Ryan, like circa, I don't know, must have been like 85, 86. Like
Kentucky
like
in 85, as in you're a Mexican woman in Kentucky in 85. All right. Let's hear it.
Well, and with a clipboard and with a crew, you know, and so I had my
and
crew
being, we were shooting video. Being a boss.
Exactly, being a boss. And we walk into the room. First of all, I have to tell you that my appreciation for jeans went up 300%. The way that they make those things is like amazing. But we were walking around shooting the stitchers and the people in the laundry and the, you know, and we were talking to everybody. And it was just such a different world. You know, we went into the break room, just to give you an idea, because I know kids can't fathom this. Okay. And the smoke layer from people smoking inside in the break room in Kentucky was like 3 feet deep. I mean, you had to wade through the smoke in the room. That's the culture. Yeah, yucky, right? But I mean, it was just like that culture. And you could see these women that were riveting. They would pick up their eyes and they would look at me with my clipboard and my crew, and they were just making a mental note going like, I could be doing that instead of 50 cents per leg. You know, it's
like, oh, I love to hear that. I love to hear that. You've done a lot, and I'm very impressed with what you've accomplished in the last 40 years, and more so accomplished, not because you're very well off. Everyone wants to be very well off, but more so that you had such a focus on not only solving a problem and making money off of solving a problem, but just helping others along the way. That's been a theme of what I've heard today. So I just want to thank you for being a good human. That's just what that is.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
I would love to keep talking to you. I could chat with you for hours and hours and hours, but we are coming to the end. I want to thank you once again, Carla, for coming on. You were absolutely wonderful, but that is going to do it for us today. I've been your host, Ryan McGovern. Thank you guys so much for coming back to the show and listening. If you've gotten this far in the episode, you're all rock stars. Make sure you subscribe. We have tons of episodes coming up. Thank you for tuning in to the Niche Agency Podcast. Thank you for being here, Carla. If you're an agency owner trying to niche or scale your business, if something along the lines of white label SEO is something you'd like to discuss, I would love to talk to you. My LinkedIn is Ryan McGovern. It's the green background with a goofy looking guy on it. Or you can just email me, ryan@seobrothers.co, if that's your jam, or if you just want to chat about the agency life. I love talking to people. Carla, if anybody listening right now resonated with what you had to say, and they want to know how to target the foreign language market, how can people get a hold of you?
Sure. They can call me at 510-435-7355, or they can write to me at Carla, C-A-R-L-A, at exitforesight.com.
Wonderful. Thank you again, Carla. Take care, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Ryan.